I don't see you in a technical document.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll briefly mention this is public hearing, possible work session on relating to House Bill 5039, which is the budget bill for the Department of Revenue. And just as some brief background, the department doesn't have any policy option packages in its proposed 2001-03 budget, but it has identified funds in its base budget that it plans to use for technology initiatives in 2001-03. We'll discuss those in detail. During the biennium, during the interim, there weren't really any major issues for the department in terms of appearing before any joint or any interim committees. It did come before the emergency board in October of 99, I believe it was, to request release of a special purpose appropriation that had been put in the emergency fund by the 99 legislature, and that did have to do with some of its information systems activities, and it can talk about those if you have any questions. The emergency board did approve the department's request. And as you can imagine, this is an agency that depends heavily upon technology to achieve its mission and its goals. So now I'd just like to turn it over to the agency representative to address the list of questions that have been posed by this subcommittee and any others that you can.
Okay, just got a tight schedule today, other things, right? So we'll try to go into work session 4:15.
So. Whatever works for you.
Again,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Harshenko. I'm the director of your Department of Revenue. With me today is Don O'Meara. Don most recently was the manager of our computer services section and has just recently rotated into our corporation section. What I'd like to do today is review with you the materials that that we prepared and that I believe are in your binders. Introduce you to the Department of Revenue a little bit, talk to you about how we use technology, and then address the specific questions that have been given to us. The department administers 35 different tax programs. I'm just going to give you highlights. That we collect funds that make up about 92% of the general funds, including the Oregon Personal Income Tax and Associated Employer Withholding, corporation income and excise taxes, inheritance tax, cigarette tax, and other tobacco taxes. We collect debts that are due to other state agencies. We supervise the property tax system throughout the state, and on behalf of the counties, we do valuation work for all of the utility properties and major industrial plants in the state. We administer timber taxes, and we support the county's mapping programs. Some of our other funds programs include the 911 emergency services tax, a fee that's collected from dry cleaners, a hazardous substances fee that funds in part DEQ and in part the fire marshal's office. And we also collect under contract for TriMet and for the Lane Transit District transit taxes. We also administer some programs where we pay money out. We manage the senior deferral program, which allows individual senior citizens to defer payment of their property taxes or special assessments on their property. We also administer a program that provides assistance to low-income elderly renters, and we pay through a state general fund appropriation property taxes for some nonprofit homes for the elderly. All of our funding is either general fund, probably about 85%, or other fund, and we have no federal funds. Now turning to the materials, we wanted to talk to you just briefly about why we do what we do and how we do it. We wanted to talk to you about our values. As you know, since we administer the tax laws, the public's confidence in our management of those programs is critical to our ability to do that successfully. We rely on mostly voluntary compliance for all of our tax programs. And we are very careful about safeguarding both the funds that we receive and the information that comes with it, and we use technology to do those things. We also have a high value around operational excellence. We are always looking for ways to make tax consumption better for taxpayers, and for the state and making compliance easier and faster, and we use technology to do that. We have a very high value about around fiscal responsibility. We have to manage the resources that we're given to the legislature in order to fulfill our mission, and we try to make decisions about how we use those resources based on data that's available on the effectiveness of our program administration, the benefits that we can achieve, and we look always for opportunities to leverage resources from other places, such as our state agency and federal government business partners. Technology enables us to do that as well. We also have to process and account for all the money that comes in and the accompanying documentation, and we use technology to do that. One part of our vision is to always strive for operational excellence through the use of technology, and we try to take full advantages of the opportunities presented by new technology, but we do so responsibly and carefully. We need to be flexible, and this is one of the things that I think is very important for me to share with you. We've learned over time that our ability to be flexible is critical to our ability to meet the needs of citizens and the legislature in tax administration. And even though we don't always know what is coming, we know that big things often do come that we have to be able to respond to on fairly short notice. And some examples just over the last couple of years include Measure 50, the federal retiree income tax refund case, House Bill 3509 from last session, Y2K, and the change in the senior deferral program to add the disabled to that program requires some expansion. On the horizon, we see the changing economy as something that we're going to have to be able to deal with and be flexible in responding to. The president's tax plan will have some flow-through effects on Oregon, and we may need to be able to respond to that. And there are some fairly significant changes in the property tax system that have been proposed and will be considered by this legislative session, as well as some potential new tax sources. We have five guiding principles that we use as we consider how we're going to use information technology. We have to maintain the security of our data and our systems and protect them against access or use by unauthorized persons, and that is required under both federal and state law. There are serious criminal penalties for our making confidential information available in violation of the statute. The integrity of our data and systems. We have to provide accurate information and correct processing of that information so that we can provide information to you, your staff, both Legislative Fiscal Office and Legislative Revenue Office, the Department of Administrative Services, Secretary of State, and Treasurer's Office. Because we are so dependent on information systems, we have to be sure that whatever we use is highly available to our staff. It's available all the time. The information they need and the applications they need are available at their desktop as they need them. And also, we need to have high performance in response time, and our systems provide instantaneous response, which enables our people to be as productive as possible. I'm turning to page 7 of the materials. We've seen quite a change in the mix in our workforce over the last 10 years, and we've done a lot of that transformation through internal change. We have reduced the number of managers, we have reduced the number of clerical and support positions that we have, and we've increased the number of professional and technical staff. And what's enabled us to do that is an increase in the number of our computer technicians. We've been able to add the number of people who do development for us of our applications, particularly in order to make our people more effective. Turning to page 8 of the presentation materials, information technology at the department enables us to do a lot of different things. We have a very high volume of data that we have to process. We get about 4.7 million documents each year, returns, payments, coupons, correspondence, and information technology allows us to process all that information. It allows us to process electronic returns. We had 258,000 personal income tax returns filed electronically last season, and we're already about 30% ahead of the volume from last season, this season at this point in time. We also process over 390,000 electronic tax payments from employers and corporations. IT allows us to deliver information and tools to employees at their desktops, and it's also allowed us to work with our state agency partners, the Department of Consumer and Business Services and the Employment Department, to allow employers to report and pay their payroll taxes on one form with one check at one time. We have a number of external partners that we connect to. I mentioned our state agency partners. We also have a lot of interaction with data exchange with the Internal Revenue Service. We're using the state printer and sending electronic print jobs to them. State Treasurer's Office for tax payment and banking information. The courts in connection with our collection of debts that are owed to them, and the counties in the property tax system. Don's going to talk to you a little bit now about the enterprise level mid-range computer that we have and the services on that.
Chair Hill, committee members. I'm going to turn to page 9 and ask you to look at the excuse me, the graphic there. We have a
can you introduce yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, my name is Don O'Mara. I'm with the Department of Revenue. Let's look to page 9 at the graphic presentation there. We have a three-tier computing tech infrastructure architecture that this graphic represents. It shows three concentric circles. At the core of the graphic, or the center circle, this is the department's AS400. It is the secure environment where all the taxpayer data is maintained. The department went to AS400 technology in the late 1980s. Up to that time, the department had its information technology systems were a series of very separate, non-integrated systems that resided on the DAS mainframe that were particular to a tax program. So we had several accounts receivable systems, several taxpayer databases, and they were not integrated, and they did not really contribute significantly to the productivity of our employees. So our management team at that time sought some better solutions, and with the help of a consultant, landed on the AS400 technology. At that time, it was called System 38, and has since evolved and been renamed. This is a technology that we review our use of it annually through the services of Gartner Group research and consultants, and they do an annual review of the AS400 platform and do a 5-year projection of its strengths and its future, and they update that 5-year forecast annually. So we keep an eye on this as a technology that we want to continue to use. It hosts our primary taxpayer databases, one for individual taxpayers, one for business taxpayers. And it also hosts our integrated tax accounting system, which is our largest application. It accounts for the revenue for all of our tax programs and also for all of us taxpayers. The next level in the diagram is our network. It is our internal information highway. It is you see several in the diagram, there are several specialized servers shown there. These are servers that host really productivity tools that are specific to some of our work groups. Our income tax auditors have an application there that automates a lot of their process, along with people who work on finding non-filers and asking them to file, and likewise with our industrial property tax returns. The outside circle is that's our employees. These are their desktop computers. This is where our employees really touch the data and the systems that give them the information that they need to do their work and make decisions, and also give them access to systems that automate their work. I'll give you just a couple of examples. If you look at the workstation at the bottom of the diagram, at the 6 o'clock position, if you will, that PC is shows being connected to the AS400 through our network by the dotted line. This could be a situation where one of our revenue agents is working with a taxpayer and needs to know all of the account balances that taxpayer has with us. And the revenue agent can almost instantaneously pull up that data, share it with the taxpayer, and together they can make the decisions they need to resolve the problem. A little more involved situation is at the 9 o'clock position at the far left, where the desktop interacts with a network server, and then the network server also interacts with the AS400. And this could be a situation where a filing enforcement employee is using specialized bootware on that server that automates the work that they do. And when they are done, then that application there also updates the AS400 databases and accounting system. The last example I'll point out is at the 1 o'clock position is a desktop, a personal computer that's at this point not connected to anything. That could be like one of our tax economists working offline to prepare a special report and using the ability to create graphics and narrative for that report. The next page talks about our information technology governance. And Elizabeth mentioned earlier the importance that we place on making good decisions on the use of technology. And this is the governance model that we use to assure that. At the top of the model is IT Executive Committee. This is members of our executive management team that really set our IT policy and deal with high-level issues. An example would be, this is where they would discuss a lot what the revenues presence would be in the future in terms of e-government services for the public. On the next layer down, the IT Management Council is a team of all of our technology managers in the agency whose task it is to see that all three of the tiers of technology interoperate effectively together. The next two committees are really mixes of our IT experts and our business managers to work together to make good decisions. Our hardware-software committee sets the standards for our personal computers to ensure that they all work well together and that our cost of support and maintenance of those assets is low. The last group there, the Systems Development Planning Committee, their task is to develop plans for the systems that we will develop that we have talked about earlier that are really major projects. And they develop plans that go out 2 to 3 years, but they update those quarterly as new information and situations arise.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Keep going.
Okay. I got rattled.
I would just mention that the Systems Development Planning Committee, well, they prioritize the systems that we are going to work on and the projects we're going to do. They have a very, very long list of work that it could be done if we can get to it, but almost never can we get to all the projects that are outlined.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one of the things that's really important for us to share with you is that underlying all of this governance structure that we have is our agency budget allocation process. When the session is over, actually before the session is over, once we know what our budget is going to be, we go back to the agency and we have a leadership group that consists of all of our managers at the section manager level and above to allocate the resources so that we can do what it is you need us to do each biennium. And we will do that considering any new requirements that we learn about between now and that time. The productivity expectations that you have for us, our business strategy, and the resources that are available to us. And we regularly revisit our spending patterns and changing environment throughout the biennium. like to talk just briefly about productivity gains that we have already achieved through technology and turning involved in presentation materials. And I'm just going to highlight a few of these examples that have really been significant to us in helping us with productivity. Under taxpayer and department productivity, the second and third bullets, I think, are very significant. We began making electronic filing available for personal income tax returns for the 1993 tax filing year. We do this in partnership with the Internal Revenue Service, and we've had, and also in partnership with private companies that actually develop software for individuals to file directly through the internet from their home. For the 1994 season, we began to use data from the Internal Revenue Service from their tape exchange program, and we were able to tell taxpayers they didn't have to include all of their federal schedules with their income tax return. This made things easier for the taxpayers in that they didn't have to send in a lot of paper. It also made things easier for us if we didn't have to do a lot of data entry. Under department productivity, the second bullet refers to the creation of our integrated tax accounting system in 1993. As Don mentioned, until that time, the way that we accounted for all of our programs was separate. This accounting system allows us to pull all of those things together and allows our agents who work with taxpayers on all of their accounts with us, regardless whether it's income tax, timber tax, or employer withholding. We also, the fourth bullet there, implemented a scannable tax payment coupon that allowed us to become more efficient. Since that time, we've introduced, and a bullet at the bottom of the page on 12, electronic data transfer with our state agency clients for whom we collect guests. Among the many other things that we've done very recently on the third bullet from the end of that section on page 13, built new automated systems in the course of migration and Y2K preparation for our cigarette tax program, the transit tax programs, and 14 other programs we consider to be small in comparison to, say, our personal income tax program. We're currently in the process of enhancing our core information systems, our integrated tax accounting system, and our automated collection tracking system to increase employee productivity. And we're in the process of upgrading our remittance processing equipment so that we can report more quickly to both the Treasury and to taxpayers that have questions about the application of their payments. The next two pages have some graphics on them to show you how our productivity has increased while our workload has increased. And this is due, we believe, to our ability to use technology and automate our systems. The numbers of documents that we process in the agency have continued to grow, and for the last year for which we have complete data was about 4.7 million documents. The number of hours that we spend processing those documents has fallen over the same period of time. And the coupons and no federal schedules, along with some other improvements, have enabled us to process those documents more efficiently. Yes.
Do you operate a document imaging system? You have scanning. Are you visually imaging returns and documentation coming through, or are you doing microsearch?
Mr. Chair, the returns are currently being filmed on microfiche. Actually, we keep paper returns for a certain period of time, and then we have filming. The documents that we need to have an exact image of, which are checks and coupons, are imaged through the remittance processing equipment, and we have to retrieve those images. Right now, we can only hold about 3 days' worth of images. The upgrade process is going to give us more storage so that we can hold those images for up to 2 years. Taxpayers tend to find problems with the application of payments over months rather than days, and so it's important for us to be able to do that. But that's the only imaging that we have right now.
Is that an issue of just storage?
It has been a storage issue.
What are you doing in backup?
All of our servers are, they're doing all of that internally right now.
You stored offsite?
We do have offsite storage, yeah.
Do you participate in burns?
We do not.
Why not?
So far, it hasn't been economically a good decision for us. If the cost has been one that we couldn't really deal with.
Can you give me a spreadsheet concerning in terms of what you're spending today versus your calculation of why burns is not cost effective to you?
We'll get that for you, Mr. Chair.
And you include the cost of the offsite storage as well as that cost.
Mr. Chair, the note I have is to give you a cost comparison between what we're doing and what the Burns Data Center would cost based on information we have from there.
But I want to make sure we include the cost of storage locally here versus electronically in Burns. The total cost.
Okay.
Not just the cost of active, but the any of you have any questions?
Mr. Chair.
So do you.
I have a question on your performance report, productivity gains in return processing. Do you show any information on cost per document on your processing? It shows per FTE dollar collected. But do you have a report on cost per document that you process?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we can provide you a cost per document. I don't have it off the top of my head, but we do that.
Oh.
We can review that. Mm. So I can get that for the committee.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
On Susie's analysis, it shows cost per document, except I would like to see it in a chart.
You'd like to work with who on getting that information translated into a chart?
Yes, translated into cost per document. It just looks like you're getting a diminishing return on more auditors invested.
Mr. Chair, if I could clarify, this what Senator Yee is looking at is an excerpt from the publication that the Legislative Fiscal Office put out at the beginning of every session, an analysis of the governor's recommended budget, and this is the analysis of the Department of Revenue, and one of their performance measures relating to efficiency is the cost per document filed, and there are some dollar figures in there. States, at least at the time that I was getting the information from the department, which would have been last fall, the cost for processing and examining returns, collection activities, dispute resolution, taxpayer education and assistance included. Their goal is 560, or at that time was 565 per document. $97.99, the actual cost was $5.77. For $99.01, it's projected to be slightly higher than their goal at $5.96. And in part, this is attributed to the increase in staff that they received in $99.01 to increase revenue collections, so it's reflecting the increased cost of those staff. But I would point out, as my write-up does, that the overall trend since 1992 has been a downward trend.
Mr. Chairman, my point is, as they increase the number of auditors, seems to me the cost has gone up per document. So I just want to know whether there is a diminishing return as you increase more auditors, whether it becomes more efficient or not.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, as we add staff, we also need to continue to improve our systems so that they are more productive, or we will run into that very problem that you've identified. We had a number of things that happened during the last biennium that caused us to focus our IT resource on catching up. We had Y2K. We had some other things that we were doing that that where we did not focus IT resource on development of new tools that would make our audit staff more productive. Now that we've finished that work, we're back. And in fact, we've just we've had a team that's been working on enhancements to the integrated tax accounting system, the automated collection system, and our and our business information system. And over the next 2 years, you should see us improving in the productivity area again. But it is they're tied not only to the numbers of people coming in who we do need to train, and who sort of come up in productivity after a while of having been trained and developing some experience, and our ability to give them tools.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So you're saying you will be able to reach your goal after the updating of the process of your data processing?
Yes.
I have two questions. One, I just looked at your desktop system, the overall number of desktop systems that you provided us, I think on page 25. And then I also looked at the FTE requested. I'm assuming there's like 200, you have 200 more desktop systems than you have approved FTE.
Right.
I know you have part-time FTE and other things. But you just give me a little more,
like a little more
thorough explanation. I mean, I think probably it's because of tax season and when you guys probably have a high degree of processing over a period of a couple months.
But it's actually because of quite a few things. One is tax season. We bring on seasonal employees to help us with processing, data entry, and our taxpayer identification function, and we have to have computers for them.
Just as a follow-up, then, how many seasonal employees do you put on every tax season?
We, in the past, we have brought on about 125 to 150 seasonals. This season, we're doing a few things differently, and we're going to try to keep the number down. We're actually turning back positions in the governor's recommended budget in a reduction package, and so we're streamlining that process a little bit more for this season, and then for next season, we're already planning for some other changes. We're having trouble recruiting enough seasonal folks, and so we're trying to move toward a more automated system. So you'll see those numbers go down over time.
Just as an additional follow-up, Mr. Chair, can you give me what your staffing looks like during those peak times when you're having your processing? How many bodies you actually have? I know it's hard on FTEs are always
FTEs
a hard thing to combine
hard,
everyone.
Right.
You slap everyone together, and I'm just trying to get a global picture of where you guys sit, and
well,
I can't.
In the processing center, other than during the season, we have about, I think it's about 400 permanent staff. We add another 125 to 150 bodies that come in. We run two shifts. Daytime shift and an evening shift in order to do the processing. The processing season runs, we tend to start bringing people on in January, and they'll be there until end of May, very first part of June.
But I guess as a follow-up, then, so that deals with about three-quarters of those extra systems.
Right. That's one. One piece is the processing. Our development staff, when I walk through computer services, I see people with two computers on their desk because they're doing one for development and one for testing. We've got a few extras for parts. We've got folks in our communication section with two. Many have two on their desk because they have a Mac, because that's really good for the desktop publishing, and a PC because they have to be wired into the rest of our systems, which are PC and you know, DOS-based. And then I've got a little schedule here that gets it right down to the number of of machines and the number of people.
If you can share that with me, I would appreciate it.
I was asking the same question.
For example.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You mentioned that you do collections for the court system.
Yes, we do.
And you actually take on the collection function? I mean, if somebody doesn't pay, you send reminders and that sort of thing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, we have a, under the statute, we are the state's collection agent, and state agencies, including the courts, can refer delinquent debt to us. We have the ability to look for income tax refunds and offset any debt against an income tax refund, and we also provide a full range of collection services, including billing, setting up payment plans, and, if necessary, enforced collection.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was thinking about this collection function, and I have several questions about that, if I could just go forward with them. Thank you. The first thing that comes to mind is that we've enacted statutes or have proposed statutes that would allow for private collectors to assist with the function of collecting revenues owed to the state. And if you could make a comment about the progress in this area and whether or not that program has resulted in any reduction of FTE or savings to the agency. And then the second question would be, in the area of child support collection, we were treated earlier in this committee to a rather extensive narrative of the form and function of adult and family services collection techniques and their big, huge computer that does all that. I guess I'm talking about Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And automatic wage withholding orders and so forth. I'm just wondering if we were to enact a statutory scheme like that, wage withholding or whatever, for debts owed to the state that have been reduced to judgment, would that enhance revenues to the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, let me take your first question first, the private collections. House Bill 3509 was enacted last legislative session, directing agencies to move their debt through and to private collection agencies if they had not received a payment within 1 year. We had been using private collection agencies where that made business sense for us, and we're a part of that mandate. It's a 1 year cycle. We have. Our experience is that we collect everything that's owed to us sooner or later, and it's a question more of timing than anything. What the private collection agency contracts enable us to do is move some accounts out that we might not have the resources to get to. There's definitely more in our accounts than we have the staff to collect right now. So moving accounts to private collection agencies doesn't reduce our need to keep our people working on that. It hasn't reduced FTE. It's just allowed us to get to more accounts.
If I could follow up.
Could I make a comment that fits in with this, Mr. Chair? I just came from Judiciary. And this topic, because the sheriffs were in today, and they're going to, in some counties, they want to start recovering the cost from prisoners in county jails. And the idea was to have the Department of Revenue collect that money. And the AG was in talking to us, and your staff people were in talking to us today. And they're reminding us in some cases, by the way, this would take an additional 4.5 individuals. But that comes from other funds because many of these programs have to be self-support. That one would have to be self-supporting. But the point was that private investigators, and that came up, why not let private investigators are appointed, and private collectors, and even the lobbyist for them was testifying, they cannot get in and get, it has to do with the child support money and monies owed to the state, and they cannot be involved in that to some extent. So they said the private collectors could not be involved in part of this. And so we really didn't have any savings there. Now, I don't know, I'm just hearing this today and trying to get it all put in my mind right now, but there's certain things, because the question we had, where does child support fit into this and the family, they said the state obligation comes first, but the private collectors could not, they cannot take that money off the top.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I've done some work in that field, and it's a federal provision of the 40 law that we, our child support collection laws, that mm-hmm. you can't assign any portion of the child support
right.
debt
right.
or collection. So that's something different than what we're talking about.
They were talking about monies owed to the state, for example.
Yeah, monies owed to the state. The state could assign a portion of that so that the private collector can get his fees for debts other than child support. But I'm talking about money owed to the state.
Can it be done electronically?
Their lobbyists were saying today they couldn't in some cases. That's why.
Well, the child support you can't. That's
the child support, yeah. But they're done at the other. Okay, I've got a lot of questions, I guess.
Maybe, I'm sure Elizabeth would be more than happy to talk to you about these. Do you have any additional follow-ups?
Well, no. Thank you. Probably not.
Answer your other question. We do provide collection services to the Child Support Division. They have the ability to have any income tax refund offset against the debt, but we don't provide them with the full range of collection services. They only use the refund offset program at this time.
One more question. You know, any agency that provides services for the collection of child support under the 4D regs can make a claim to the federal government and get reimbursed 60% of their costs of that portion of the operation dedicated to that. Do you do that? Do you get that money back?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, no, we don't, because we charge the Child Support Division for the actual cost of the refund offset program. So I would guess that they then claim reimbursement for that charge to them as the child support administering agency.
But if it worked differently, then your agency would have the money, wouldn't it? Have the 60% reimbursement for your efforts expended if you build the set, if you...
Well, if we build the federal government, we would have Fed funds, and I just assume stay away from Fed funds. But the way that our program works right now is that for any state agency for which we offer collection services, we charge them the actual cost of providing those services. And then I would guess that the Child Support Division reports that cost to the federal government and gets reimbursement for their cost.
Representative Patridge?
I just have one other question. I was wondering on the collection side also, are you getting the data that you need from the courts and the other agencies that are trying to use you as a collection agency in a timely manner? We've been looking at law enforcement system. I mean, since we're looking at all of those, mm-hmm. I'm concerned that you're not getting that data in a timely manner because of all the various data systems we have and having them convert those things and give them to you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, we tell agencies that if they want to use our service, what we need is certain information about the debtor and the debt, and it has to be liquidated. And once we get that information, then we can act. I know that for some agencies, there's a little bit of lag time in crediting payments that come into them directly. And if that's what you're referring to, we're trying to work with them to make sure that we give them information about what we're collecting so that if a debt has been fully collected, we're not going after someone still because we don't know that. But we do have some agencies that are we're working with online and others where we're still working on paper.
Okay.
I'll try not to go surround the bat in this particular one. Is the last one. I wasn't aware, but I guess you are the collection agency for any city over 500,000. And traffic fines, so forth, in the city of Portland come under your jurisdiction, I tell us today.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, we collect traffic fines for Multnomah County. For the Multnomah County Court. And so any traffic fines that are being assessed by the Multnomah County Court that are referred to us for collection, we would collect. I'm mindful of the time, Mr. Chair. Do you want us to skip to any particular focus?
Well, I was just going to see if there's any further questions. If not, then we will move into the work session once we find Senator Yee. Breather here.
I apologize about the talk, for I was sure not expecting that, and it sure rattled me. The photographer.
Oh, no.
Oh, Mr. Chair, could I, as long as we've got a little time, I'd like to get clarification of the question that you asked earlier about the cost of storage of data. We have a backup service that we have under contract. I believe it's with Weyerhaeuser in the Seattle area. Is that right, John?
Well, that is disaster recovery.
Disaster recovery.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not get back to that issue for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
We do our backups internally, and then we actually store those tapes physically outside at state archives.
Okay. Yep. But you have a hot site that you operate, Weyerhaeuser?
We do have a Weyerhaeuser as our hot site for disaster recovery. Yes. We have been in the process of working with DAS and I think a couple of other agencies right now to on a new RFP for a joint site for disaster recovery.
At Burns? At the Burns facility?
I would have to find out a little more information. I think that's probably, like, at least, I don't know if it's exclusively looking at Burns or more.
I believe that's Eugene Timms.
Not yet.
We're working on this.
It hasn't come through
the
house yet. Okay. I would strongly suggest that you work on moving your hot site to the Burns hot site. Center, which has a facility there, which Lottery, you know, has their hot site there. So that'd be a very good thing to do.
I think one of the issues for us is that they were not able to provide that for the AS400. I think that might have been an issue.
I think that's just an issue of going out and buying AS400s and sticking them there. So it's probably a correct statement. But I think it's a facility that can, if you had a catastrophic disaster at this location, that you could turn the switch and turn off of their minimal, all the software works on machines.
Given what's happening to our state lately, it might be a good idea.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me reassure you that before we do any of these things and engage in any of these contracts, we're in consultation with IRMD about what makes all the business. And so we're not doing things without their knowledge or their agreement.
This one has some economic and social significance.
Yes, I understand that.
Okay. With that, let's close the public hearing. Let's open a work session relating to House Bill 5059. I don't think we have any specific issues. There's two budget notes that I would request. One is a budget note requiring revenue to move hosting of external web services to DAS, and then to report back on that. And I'd also like a budget note to have revenue come by the January JLMTC committee. And report on how revenue could begin to use the Burns Archive Center.
And I didn't hear you. A specific date to the JLCIMT?
January 2000.
January
2000.
Oh,
2002.
Yes.
Okay.
Not
yet.
That's why I wanted to know the date on use of the Burns data center. Okay.
Are there any specific concerns or questions that are used? We talked about all the performance measures.
And all this is within the governor's budget and the co-chairs and all that stuff?
I believe so. I don't think in terms of...
No news, nothing new.
This is just base budget. Yeah. There's no policy action packages in this package. So I don't think we have to make any specific recommendations.
Mr. Chair, the only thing is the budget notes need to be passed by the co-chairs for their approval.
Yeah. Okay. So is there any objection to making those requests for those budget notes?
None.
Okay. So with that, we will close the work session. And if there's not any further business, we will stand adjourned.
I'm going to have to vote this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.